Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Monday, September the 3rd. Excuse me, Tuesday, September the 3rd. Hope you had a great Labor Day weekend. And Ed Vitagliano is with me this morning. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Fred Jackson.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing, Fred?
Labored on Labor Day weekend.
You did? What'd
well,
you do?
Well, you're Canadian anyway, so I mean, it's... It's not a Canadian holiday, is it?
Just chores. Yeah, we have labor too. Not chores.
But is Labor Day celebrated the same day in Canada?
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I retract my wisecrack.
With great sincerity.
Yes. I'm brokenhearted over it.
What's the history of Labor Day? Do you know anybody to give me a synopsis of that?
You know, this is one of those moments where, like, when my kids are growing up, they'd ask a question. And I'd do my best to answer whatever seemed, you know, logical. And at some point, when my son was like 12 or 13, he said, "Why don't you just admit you don't know?"
He figured me out. Well, it does have to do with the labor movement, right?
Back I'm just going to tell you, I don't know.
I think it's a celebration of the working man, so to speak.
And working
in
woman.
Canada and the U.S. That's Although right. always I got a little I get a little kick out of that expression, working man.
Yeah,
like who isn't? I mean, what is?
There are people who aren't working.
Well, I mean, I've just never the working man. You know, he supports the working man.
Oh, I see.
You know, you heard this politician say, "I support the working man."
Yeah,
I've never seen a politician go, "I support the lazy man." Who's with me? All lazy people, rise up.
That's right. I want your vote.
Take your rightful place. All right, Fred, what's happening in the world today?
Well, the big story over the last several days is Hurricane Dorian, and certainly continued to watch that through the weekend, that storm. And it's kind of a strange storm in many ways. It got up to a Category 5 at one point during the weekend. Mm-hmm. And that's about as bad as you can get. Sustained winds, 160, 170 miles an hour. I saw a fascinating picture. I think it was yesterday morning where one of these weather airplanes flew through the center of this thing.
Hurricane hunters kind of thing?
Yes. And it was at a stage they call the stadium stage. In that, you know, they're in the middle, they're in the eye, and you can look up, clear blue sky right above you. But there's this stacking all around you like a stadium. Yeah. And that was when it's at its worst. And then get up this morning and it started to downgrade yesterday. Now it's down. And I say downgrade to a 3. And there is a temptation to say, whew, it's going to be okay. But a hurricane at stage 3 is still really bad. And so Bahamas has taken the big hit so far. And the other characteristic of this storm, at one point it was moving at 8 miles an hour, slowed down to 5, and then overnight it almost stopped completely.
That's really bad.
That's really bad.
Because that's what continually dumps water,
yes.
water.
I saw some pictures from some dear folks on the Bahamas and where the flooding has come in, and there was water lapping at their windows of their house, the lower level of their house. What they're predicting right now as far as the U.S. coastline, they believe the center is going to stay offshore, but there is still the surge danger, which could be up to 18 feet along the coast of Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and on up. And this thing, the one thing that seems to be consistent, it is going to move very, very slowly. And so it's going to be a rain event. It's going to be still a strong wind event and also the storm surge event. So those states along those coastlines, that eastern coastline of those states, still not out of the woods.
And now Fox News is just now reporting that it's been downgraded to a Category 2 storm, but mentions as it finally starts to inch away from Grand Bahama. So that's the way they're talking about this, very slow moving.
Yes. I think at least 5-6 people have lost their lives in the Bahamas. Certainly on the weekend, it was interesting where we live here in northern Mississippi. I saw a continuous caravan of power trucks coming from other places in the country to get ready to go down there to help, which is, which I just think is a fantastic thing. You know, trucks from Oklahoma, all over coming to help the folks out in Florida, Georgia.
Allison, my wife and I were talking about this the other day because you say here in Tupelo, we saw a lot of trucks from Tulsa rescue and also the power companies.
Yes.
And you see this, and you're just wondering, man, who has the coordination for this? I guess it's FEMA.
It must be.
Because you have this influx of probably thousands of vehicles coming in to a given area. In this case, they're waiting to see where to go along the Florida coast or Carolina coast. And so they're staged.
Yes.
You know, but somebody has to be in charge of all this.
And the federal government must pay for this, right? They must pay?
Yeah, I think this is included in the cost of, you know, when the federal government makes these, passes these emergency spending bills to cover storms, I think that's probably, they use that to pay the power companies for doing things like this.
Yeah, they got to pay for hotels. Who else is going to pay them? Yeah. These guys got, I guess it's mostly men that work on these power, go up in the lifts and stuff. But I mean, they got you know, food costs and gasoline and you know, paychecks and hotel rooms and all that. And I doubt the power. Maybe the power company foots that bill, but I'm guessing it's the federal government.
But how could you? I think it had to be the federal government, wouldn't it? Because why would a power company in Tulsa, Oklahoma, go to Jacksonville, Florida?
Yes.
If somebody's not going to pay them, and the people of Tulsa aren't going to pay them,
right?
You know,
and they move around, and like the when there are tornado damages in Oklahoma, people from this area go there. But the other thing that's happening too is that Christian relief agencies like Samaritans, Southern Baptists, and others are
Eight Days of Hope
are getting ready for this as well. And I was just reading before I came to the studio. There's actually a Bahamas relief ministry based in Florida. And they're gearing up to go to the Bahamas to help out the folks there because many, many Christians on the Bahamas, a very, very conservative area, actually.
Yeah.
And so they're going to need a whole lot of help in the Bahamas.
And from what I was reading, that, you know, that stalling out of the hurricane over the Bahamas, just as you say, it just was terrible because it just battered them.
Yeah.
It battered them with the high winds and the and the flooding.
And the storm surge and then the continual rain. Now, let me ask you guys this.
They depend a lot on tourism, too, there.
Yes, they do, because it's devastating the tourist industry, tourism industry. Let me just ask you a quick question. I know we got to go to a guest here, but and I'm asking you a question that this is one that you may not know. I just thought about it. So when we talk about a hurricane dumping rain, is that salt water or is it fresh water? In other words, I'm wondering if that's, you know, hundreds of gallons of
would be fresh water.
Okay.
Just like when we get a rainstorm, it may
have picked up. It's fresh water.
Yeah. It draws up.
It's okay. So it's not, because I know it's sucking up water from the ocean, and I guess the salt's too heavy to pull
up. But the storm surge.
Yeah, right.
That'd be salt water.
That would be additional corrosive damage.
Oh, yeah.
And if we keep going any further on this, we'll have to enter the I don't know zone.
Yes.
That you talked about earlier.
That's right.
Because Fred and I can only fake meteorology up to a point. And then
but that was pretty good, though.
After that, we're exposed.
Here I was talking about the salt's too heavy. What do I know?
The salt's,
I didn't pay attention in
the salt's
science
too heavy.
Class.
But, yeah, the poor people of the Bahamas just taking a beating out there. Now, this finally, my last question on this, are you saying, Fred, that the latest predictions are that they don't know where this storm is going to land, or will it not make landfall?
Well, what they're saying this morning is that it has started to curve to the north a bit, and that the center of the storm is not likely to hit the coastline. It's just going to start to head north.
So skirt the coastline all up
the
coastline.
But still the outer bands. I mean, Florida's starting to get the outer bands now.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Ed, you want to tell folks how they can watch the show online? And
absolutely. If you would like to watch the show online, you have two options.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to Facebook or YouTube and search for Today's Issues, and you can watch this here show. And I know that on Facebook we have regular viewers who participate with us. They make comments. They interact back and forth, kind of our little Today's Issues community. Brent Creeley, our producer, will post many of the articles that we discuss online, so you can read further. If you want more information, a particular story, you go, wow, I'd like to know more about that. Well, you can just go to our Facebook page, search for Today's Issues.
Oh, American Family Radio is what you're listening to. We thank you for joining us. All right, we have with us Dr. Frank Turek. Frank's on with us most Tuesdays, and he is the host of Cross Examined, heard each weekend, twice here on AFR, Saturdays at 9 a.m. Central Time, and then Sundays at 4 p.m. Central Time. The popular program, Cross Examined. Frank, how you doing, brother?
I'm great, and since I can watch you guys on Facebook from here in Charlotte, you are a colorful group today.
Yeah, we are.
We are.
We are. And
I've got my rainbow shirt.
He does. Ed has a rainbow shirt. Tim has his green Under Armour shirt.
Yeah, my light green. Hopefully,
uh-huh.
Fred's just
normal.
Yeah,
yeah. Plaid.
He's got
Canadian plaid on.
He does? Okay.
I think that's what you call that.
This is not rainbow. It's got a bunch of different colors. I'm not sure.
Well, that's rainbow, though, isn't it?
That's rainbow.
Yeah.
Don't back away.
I'm trying to crawfish now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just know, I know I'm not supposed to wear stripes with plaid.
Yes, that's true.
And color coordination is important. At least that was
all of us.
That's the way I was raised.
All of us, Tim.
That's the way I was raised. And then... first time I saw a guy wearing stripes with plaid, striped pants, plaid shirt, I just wanted to go up and tell him.
I know, but they do that now.
I know, but I feel the need to go.
They
and
do
tell
that
you.
On golf courses, isn't that kind of like typical? If you go, you golf, Tim.
It's one of those things you say. That's wrong. You know,
it's just wrong.
It's just wrong.
It's against democratic values.
Right. Give me your biblical reference for that. It doesn't have to be a biblical. It's extra biblical.
Yeah,
it's wrong. And you shouldn't be doing that. And you can go back to your meal now, but remember this next time you go out, sir. Right.
Yeah, nowadays, you're going to wind up in jail.
I know.
Because
somebody will slap
people,
you.
Yeah. Somebody will scrap over that.
All right, Frank, let's talk about this topic about the Democrats. And they're going after the unbelievers, the non-believers, and the pagans, aren't they? They want the pagan vote, don't they?
Well, they passed a resolution. They had a resolution out there when they had their Democratic National Committee summer meeting in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago. And this apparently was championed by the Secular Coalition of America. And it says it's a group representing atheists, agnostics, and humanists on policy matters. And here's what they said. Check this out. Quote, "Religiously unaffiliated Americans overwhelmingly share the Democratic Party's values," unquote. And this is what the resolution says. And these values are advocacy for, quote, "rational public policy based on sound science and universal humanistic values," unquote.
Now, I think you're going to have a problem with that, aren't you,
Frank? I'm going to have a problem.
Now, just to be clear, we're talking about the official... an official meeting of the Democrat Party, a national meeting.
The National Coalition or the National Committee meeting,
Okay.
DNC.
Mean, so this isn't, what I'm saying, this isn't some fringe group that's an offshoot of the Democrat Party. This is mainstream Democrat Party, and they are recruiting, going after religiously unaffiliated Americans.
And it's not just a local chapter either.
Right.
This is the Democratic National Committee's summer meeting, and we're looking at an article from the Christian Post.
Well, there's a lot of problems with it. There's some contradictory things they say. Let me just deal with the last sentence, that they're for rational public policy. Well, we're all for rational public policy, obviously, but it's based on sound science and universal humanistic values. My first question, or my first point, is based on sound science. Science doesn't give you values. Science doesn't give you morality. Morality doesn't come out of a test tube or an experiment. Morality is something you must bring to science. In other words, science doesn't tell you whether or not you ought to lie about the results of your experiment or study. You must bring truthfulness or morality to science. Science can help you discover what kind of, say, stem cell treatment might help someone, but it can't tell you whether or not it's ethical to use that treatment. Science can tell you whether there's a genetic human being in the womb, and science does tell you that. I mean, there is a genetic human being in the womb, but it can't tell you if you should protect that human being or not. I mean, if these people are for science, science will show you through sound reasoning, sound scientific principles, that there's a genetic human being in the womb. But these are the same people that are saying, don't protect that human being. They're the same people that are saying, oh no, a woman has a moral right to choose an abortion right up to birth, maybe even after birth. So science doesn't tell you anything about morality. I mean, science can tell you how to build a bomb, but it can't tell you whether or not you ought to use it. So that's my first problem with it. My second problem with it is they say these are Democratic Party values. First of all, what are Democratic Party values? What is their standard? And what are these universal humanistic values? My question is, in what are they grounded? I mean, if they're grounded in just human beings, they're not universal. Because then all you need to ask is, well, which human being gets to decide? Does Hitler get to decide? Does Mother Teresa get to decide, or somewhere in between? So they're assuming humanistic values are universal, yet they have no ground by which to ground these, or no standard by which to say these are the universal values. So they're just making it up as they go. That's my first problem. I have more if you want to go further.
No, that was your second problem.
I have
a third problem.
Go ahead, third.
Frank, I wish you would write a book about these kinds of things so that what you're saying could be shared more widely.
It is. It's on a book called Legislating Morality that I wrote about 20 years ago with Dr. Norman Geiser. And the point is, all laws are trying to legislate morality. The only question is, whose morality? And the DNC has a certain morality it wants to impose. And of course, so does the RNC. They want to impose a certain morality, too. The only question is, which is closer to the true morality? So, Ed, when people say, don't impose your morality on me, I normally stop and say, why not? Would that be immoral? Because, you see, you're imposing your morality on me right now. You're saying I ought not impose ought nots, but that's a moral position. Actually, the better answer to the question or the charge, don't impose your morality on me, is this. This isn't my morality. I didn't make this stuff up. I didn't make up the fact that murder's wrong, that theft is wrong, that rape is wrong, that abortion's wrong, that men were made for women and women were made for men, and the best way to perpetuate and stabilize society, which is the reason the government's involved in marriage to begin with, is to legally recognize the man-woman relationship over every other relationship. I didn't make any of this stuff up. This is not my morality. This is not your morality. This just happens to be the morality, the one Thomas Jefferson said was self-evident, the one the Apostle Paul said, even the Gentiles are not of the law written on their heart. So this morality isn't mine. It's grounded in God's nature. So if you have a problem with that morality, you really don't have a problem with me. You just have a problem with God because his nature is what gives us these universal values. They're not made up by the DNC. They're not made up by the RNC. We want to see if our political party or your political party, whoever you're talking about, you want to see if those values line up with God. If they do, great. If they don't, then they're just your opinion.
Frank, I guess we shouldn't be surprised. Was it 2012? Pardon me. The Democrats at their meeting in Charlotte, I believe it was, had a big debate as to whether they wanted the mention of God in their platform.
Yeah, they booed God.
Yeah, they booed God. And now we have this in 2019. Where they're openly proud of being affiliated with those who are rebelling against God.
And let me just go one step further. This resolution also says, Frank, that religious people,
yes,
people like Christians, which is who they're talking about, they use their religious liberty to oppress people. This is what the resolution says.
Yeah, well, here's the contradiction that you hit on there, Ed. They say this, Sarah Levin, who is of the Secular Coalition of America, said this: America was founded as a secular government charged with representing and protecting the freedoms of people of all faiths and none. First of all, it wasn't founded as a secular government. It was founded on theism. Mm. But you didn't have to be a Christian or any religion to be an American. So that part is true. But notice she says, protecting the freedoms of people of all faiths and none. But then, as you just pointed out, Ed, they go on to say that if religious liberty conflicts with LGBTQ values, then it's religious liberty that must go away.
Right.
In other words, she just contradicted what she just said in the paragraph above. She just said the freedoms of all faiths or none, but what happens when the so-called faiths conflict? What happens when religious rights and so-called LGBTQ rights conflict? The people at the DNC say that the religious people have no rights when they conflict with the LGBTQ. You see, there's no middle ground here. Either we have religious rights to follow God in our conscience, or we don't. If we don't, then the DNC appears to be saying, if a LGBTQ person says, you must participate in my same-sex wedding, if you're a florist or a photographer or somebody, you don't have the right not to. So whose rights take precedence here? They're saying it's the so-called LGBTQ rights, whereas our Constitution and our entire history of our country says, no, you shouldn't be forced against your conscience, against your religion, to do anything that would conflict with your conscience or your religion.
And let me just ask one other thing too, Frank. And by the way, this is really smart. You're a really smart guy. This is excellent stuff.
That's because I listen to AFR.
Yeah. When they say rational public policy based on sound science and universal humanistic values, mm-hmm. these folks constantly claim they don't believe in absolute truth. But it sure sounds like they're talking about absolute truth. And if these universal humanistic values conflict with your religious liberty, they absolutely believe in absolute truth, right?
They do, absolutely. That's right. Yeah, the people who say they don't believe in absolute or objective values are the same people will say, well, I have an objective value to or objective right to, say, marry somebody of the same sex, or I have an objective right to an abortion. They all believe they have certain objective moral rights, even if on one hand they say they don't, in the next breath they're going to say they do. Especially if you say, no, the proper moral position is to protect a human life, say, in the womb, they're going to say, oh, no, I have a right to abort that child. See? So, again, values are always imposed. The only question are whose values. And my point is, we shouldn't be inventing values. We get them from God. And that's why Jefferson was so wise when he said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. You don't need the Bible to know that. You don't need to be a Christian to know that. But God must exist for that to be true.
Interesting. He would use the word creator.
Mm-hmm.
There.
Yeah.
Huh? And, yeah. You know, let me ask you this. We got 30 seconds here. Who do you think the Democrats are going after with this kind of a position to take, where they're trying to recruit secular Americans to vote for them?
They are. They're going after the far left, which they already have anyway. So it's kind of odd what they're doing here. In fact, one guy, Michael Ware, who says he's a Christian, he used to work for the Obama administration, says this was stupid on part of the Democrats, because the people in the middle might go, well, look, I'm a Christian. How can I go with these people who are saying that right. I don't have rights as a Christian anymore? I have to give way to LGBTQ rights. How does that work? So some people are realizing how politically
I just think
a lot of this was.
A lot of this is just these people hate Christianity, and any way they can diss it.
Is this like Frank says, I don't believe in God, and boy, do I hate him?
Yeah,
that's right.
Who these folks are. Frank, your website, my friend?
Crossexamine.org. That's crossexamine with a D on the end of it, .org.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Great. Thanks
for
being with you.
Dr. Frank Turek, T-U-R-E-K. Here
is
his show.
One smart dude.
Hear his show on the weekends here on American Family Radio. We shall return momentarily with more of today's issues on AFR. Stay with us.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III.
We are in countdown mode. You've been listening. The Maiden Voyage, the television program, is coming up September 6th. The Hamilton Corner goes to television via NRB TV. You don't want to miss that if possible.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, on our tour of the Holy Land in March, one of the places we'll stop is called the House of Caiaphas. This is the place where Jesus experienced the mock trial in front of the Sanhedrin that you read about in the Bible before he was taken to Pilate. He was actually held there in that house. We go there. We visit there. We see where that was. And then right beside the house are steps that date back to the time of Christ. They're stone steps that date back to the time of Christ. Those were the very steps that Jesus walked from the Garden of Gethsemane as he was brought to this mock trial at the House of Caiaphas. That's just one of the places we'll visit in March on our Holy Land tour. For all the information on this March 12th through the 20th trip, go to twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
A lesson in patriotism. That story coming up. Todd Starnes here. You know, America is facing dangers of socialism and secularism every day, and we need young people who stand for freedom. At Liberty University, they're training the next generation of faith-based conservative leaders who will be on the front lines of this culture war. Professors teach their students about free enterprise, individual freedom, and the Constitution from a Judeo-Christian perspective. So join Liberty University in training the conservative leaders of tomorrow. Text GIVE to 839-858 today. A teenage boy in Pacific, Missouri was caught stealing an American flag the other day. The crime captured on surveillance video at the Beacon Car and Pet Wash. Bill Hoagland posted video of the incident on his Facebook page. Did not take long for folks around town to identify the culprit. But instead of arresting the kid, Mr. Hoagland decided to take matters into his own hands, and he gave the teenager a second chance. Mr. Hoagland invited the young man to fess up and return the flag in person, and he agreed not to press charges so long as the teenager spent the day handing out free American flags to all the customers at the car wash. Mr. Hoagland is a veteran. He tells the local Fox station that he just wanted to make sure that teenage boy learned a life lesson instead of going to jail. Lesson learned. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News Commentary.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. California's biggest cities confront a defecation crisis. Hard to believe, but this is an actual headline from the Wall Street Journal. This crisis brings with it a smartphone app enabling pedestrians to better navigate the excrement-laden sidewalks of San Francisco. The term defecation crisis is more commonly associated with rural India in the 1930s. Who would have imagined such a thing for contemporary America? The fact of the matter is, as we move away from a biblical worldview to embrace cultural paganism, nothing should surprise us. We don't think of the long-term effects of self-centered, sinful choices. In other words, we should realize that it's a short distance between moral defecation in the streets to physical defecation in the streets. There's no smartphone app to help us circumnavigate the judgment of God, but the Bible tells us about the repentance and restoration we so desperately need. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim here with Ed and Fred. We thank you for listening to AFR. By the way, we'll be full. Our tour of Israel, our seats will fill up in the next few weeks. By a few weeks, I'm talking three or four, probably max. So if you want to go with us in March, March 12th through the 20th, on our annual trip to the Holy Land, we'd love to have you. Most of the folks who go with us are AFR listeners, or AFA supporters. So, if you want to go, you're interested in knowing about the tour, then just go to the website. All the information is there. That website is twholyland.com. 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 If you would like a brochure sent to your mailbox, we can do that too. Just call us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, and then press number 5, and then leave us your name and your address, and we'll get that in the mail to you. Now, you guys remember, maybe you don't, Ed, I don't know how they, well, people used to, you know, back when they're in the rotary phone days, and then you had the press, the, you know, I don't know, but some Southerners used to use the expression mash.
Mash?
Mash a button.
Well, we didn't use that. But
well,
you know,
what did you use in New England?
Just push the button.
Yeah.
Press it.
Mash is pretty good.
I've heard it down south, like I mashed my finger in the door
right,
or something. We never used that expression.
But I had a friend of mine moved here from Michigan.
Yeah.
This is, he tells a story, a good friend of mine. He moved here from Michigan about 25 years ago. And he said, I couldn't hardly understand these Mississippi girls, especially.
Yeah.
When they're, you know, talking. He said, first, when I first got down here, I was asking the young lady who was, you know, working in the office, I said, how do you get out of here on the phone? So I want to, because I want to call out, you know. And she said, MASH 9. He said, what did you say? MASH 9.
MASH 9.
Yeah. MASH 9. What is that? Yeah, MASH 9. Anyway.
I will say this, yeah, though. I did, living down here, I've been married to a Mississippi girl since 81, right, and been living here since 85. And I slammed my finger in a car door once.
Ooh, wow.
And mash is the right word. I mashed it.
I want to know what kind of language you used right there when that happened to you.
It's all a blur, Tim. I don't really remember.
Okay, I just want to make sure you maintained your Christian integrity. As your,
I really don't remember, but it could have gone either way, okay, I assure you.
All right. Well, if you did slip one, you repented, I'm sure.
I'm sure I did.
MASH 9. Yep. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We thank you for listening to AFR. And we want to welcome now Sandy Rios. Sandy is the host of Sandy Rios in the Morning here on AFR, 7 to 8 Central Time each weekday morning. And she's also Director of Governmental Affairs for American Family Association. And Sandy joins us now. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, Tim, and everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for joining us. Hey, I was listening to you and Bruce this morning.
Yeah.
Bruce, your husband, and he's former FBI agent, is that what he was, or what was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, special agent. Yeah.
But you guys were talking about the report last week.
Inspector General report.
Mm-hmm. Talking about James Comey and what all was going on at the FBI during the during while they were surveilling or spying on the Trump campaign first, and then I guess the later the Trump administration. This is very interesting because Bruce has a perspective that none of us have here, having worked in the Bureau for so many years. And the way that James Comey, the former FBI director, is going around talking about his role in all this is unbelievable.
Yeah, he acts like he didn't do anything. In fact, right, he's waiting for apologies. He said that in a tweet.
What's he talking about? He was just cited by the Inspector General as having violated FBI policy, and then he wants an apology from who? For what?
People for accusing him of lying and for passing classified information, because he, heaven knows, he is above all this and hasn't done anything. You know, it was interesting to see that attorney he's a liberal professor who was on television all the time talking about the delusion, Comey's delusion, and how he's making everything up, how absolutely
Jonathan
out
Turley?
Of touch Jonathan Turley, how okay, out of touch Comey is with reality. And it's really true. He's either just a practiced liar, which I kind of think maybe he is, Tim. Okay. Or he is completely delusional, and maybe he should never, ever have been appointed FBI director.
Why do you think he wasn't? He's not going to be charged with anything?
Well, we can't say for sure he won't be yet, because there's the FISA court investigation. That part has not come in yet, and that's really the part in which he has the most culpability legally. Even Rudy Giuliani, when asked about this, as mad as he is about Comey, and as little regard as he has for him, hedged a little bit when he was asked if passing those email or those memorandum onto someone who passed them onto the press was a criminal act. And he said it would be harder to prove that, but the FISA violation, that's the danger for Comey. Because Comey signed off on three of those FISA warrants, meaning he signed off on that fake phony dossier, which, remember, it was Comey who went to President Trump before he was even sworn in and presented that phony dossier as though it were truth. Okay. And said, you know, this is what we have. So he knew when he signed off on that FISA information that he was signing off on a lie to present to the FISA court. And okay. That's a criminal offense.
Okay, and back to the other for just, and we're awaiting word on that one, the report from the...
Right.
But back to the other... The appearance here to me, having listened to you and Bruce talk and then to all the reports over the last that we've heard about FBI Director Comey, he was out to get President Trump. I mean, really, it sounds like to me he was out to maybe he thought he was on some kind of righteous mission. I don't know what was in his head exactly talking about James Comey, but he went over to the White House. Correct me if I'm wrong on this story. He went over to the White House as FBI director, went over in FBI a vehicle, I'm sure, and told the president, he was then the sitting president, true?
Yes.
Okay. President Trump, after he had been inaugurated, that I got this dossier on you. And then he talked to him, had a conversation about this phony dossier, this phony stuff made up that Hillary Clinton paid for. And then he writes notes, does Comey, about his meeting with the president. And then those notes were what he left the when he was fired, he left with, right? Go ahead.
But, well, just there were seven different. He wrote seven different memos after meetings with President Trump.
Who was he
Trump.
Writing memos the initial, to? Just a document thing?
To himself. He was documenting the conversation.
Okay.
But the first meeting he had when he brought the dossier, the president had not been sworn in yet.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah, he did was he had an FBI vehicle waiting outside for him, a driver, and other people in the car. I took a secured laptop and immediately got in the car and would type up what happened exactly. And then shared it with his attorneys, shared it with that group of the FBI, and used everything that President Trump said to him. And the thing about it is what the FBI team, that small team, the Strzok, yeah. Ms. Page, and all the rest of them were doing.
The Trump haters.
They decided what parts of those notes that Comey made were classified. And the parts that they classified were the parts that made President Trump look bad. Although one could argue they didn't really make him look that bad, but Comey, in his interpretation, like, for instance, a president saying, I hope you go easy on Lieutenant General Flynn. And Comey says, oh, he's obstructing justice. He's trying to talk me to not, you know, that's how Comey spun that. So the small group, the FBI small group out to get the president, classified all the information that implicated them in their collusion against this president. But they did not classify the parts that supposedly reported Mr. Trump's whatever fill-in-the-blank behavior there was.
But then, like Bruce and you talked about this morning on your show, then James Comey, the FBI director, I guess after he's fired, then takes some of these memos and then hands them off to his neighbor, who is a professor at some university, and tells him, get this to the media, with the idea being a special prosecutor needs to be appointed to investigate the President of the United States, Donald Trump. Is that how that happened?
Well, it was a good friend of his. I don't know if they were neighbors. He was acting not only allegedly as Comey's attorney, but he also was a professor, and he was very close to a New York Times reporter, and Comey knew that.
Okay.
And he gave that information on that one particular memo. This is complicated, Tim, because Comey was doing so many nefarious things. He actually did not hand him the memos. He copied them on his unsecured phone, and I think emailed them to him or texted them, and then asked his friend not to share the actual paper text, but to read them, share the information, okay, the content of it, to the New York Times reporter. Always trying to, so he could skirt.
Yeah,
the point is,
when, do we have the tape? We have the interview with James Comey and Brett Baier.
Yes.
Have that clip.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What you're about to hear is Brett Baier from Fox News. Sandy played this morning, and he is doing an interview with James Comey.
In 2018,
about this whole episode, and this is how it went.
I sent Mr. Richmond a copy of a two-page unclassified memo and asked him to get the substance of it out to the media.
Did you leak other things through Mr. Richmond?
Yeah. I'm smiling, Brett. I don't consider what I did with Mr. Richmond a leak. I told him about an unclassified conversation with the president.
FBI protocol says your own employment agreement with the FBI prohibits, quote, the unauthorized disclosure of any information or material from or related to FBI files or any information acquired by virtue of my official employment without prior written permission from the FBI. Did you have written permission?
No. And I didn't consider it part of an FBI file, all the things that I talked about
you
with Anderson.
You wrote it as an FBI director. It was a work product.
No, it was not. It was my personal aide de memoir.
You were talking to the president?
Sure. I created two copies of it, one to keep in my personal safe at home, and I left another one at the FBI so the Bureau could always have access to it. But I always thought of it as mine, like a diary.
Like a diary. Like he's a 12-year-old girl. I mean, a diary.
No, you know what? To me, the whole thing is this right here. If you're not trying to do something subversive, you don't hand it off to somebody else to get to the media. As if you don't want to be
connected with
it. You don't want to be connected to it. If it were, as he said, just an honest, straight up deed, then he would hand it to the New York Times himself. Right? Huh?
Right.
Why would you try to cover, quote, create some
if
kind
it's
of
not a leak?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Well, look,
go ahead.
I mean, no, you're totally right, Tim. And also just any conversation that an FBI agent was privileged to have with a president, they would not leak it to the press.
Yeah.
You just don't.
And here you're talking about the
do
director.
That. The director did it to hurt him. And that's not the only thing. Daniel Richmond is the name of his professor friend.
Yeah.
As far as we can understand, Daniel Richmond did what's called several special projects with James Comey. And many people on the front lines are saying Daniel Richmond knows a whole lot more than they've interviewed him about. And some are encouraging that he do that. In fact, you know, Comey gave him a clearance, let him into the FBI, treated him like an employee, gave him information that he didn't have a right to have. So there are so many. Comey was just a deceiver from day one. And I don't know if you heard this morning, Tim, I want to recommend this article to people. Actually, I should have recommended it to my audience this morning, but it was printed in June of 2013. It was in the Wall Street Journal, and it's called The Political Mr. Comey. And it's written before Barack Obama, when Barack Obama had appointed him, or at least had nominated him, I don't think he'd been confirmed, to be the head of the FBI. And Holman Jenkins, who writes the article, goes back in Comey's past and talks about the horrible decisions, the way he ruined people's lives in five different cases that he outlines here, and how wretched his record was as a prosecutor. It's not new. It's just that he was a big, tall guy, handsome, well-spoken, really deceiving, and the press loved him. And so he just kept being elevated. He was carried away by the publicity. It's a disaster. It really is.
Yeah, well, I think it's clear to any objective observer, and I hope we would be criticizing somebody if they tried to do this to a Democrat president as well, because it's unfair and wrong to say the least. It was a coup attempt for all practical purposes.
Yeah.
This group of people that you mentioned earlier, whose names are basically household names now, what's Strzok?
Peter.
The text between him and Lisa Page proved the real thoughts of these people in this inner circle. They couldn't stand Donald Trump. The idea of him being president was loathsome, and they were going to stop him.
Right.
However they could, even after he was elected. And now we're waiting on this Horowitz report to sort of prove that, you know, an internal investigation of the, it's scary to think that they could do all these things. Again, the idea being they were going to save the country or save the world from a Trump presidency.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And what they did, General Flynn, was also, I mean, they set him up, right, Sandy? Basically.
Oh, yes. Yes. In fact, his current attorney, Sidney Powell, is, I actually haven't talked about this on the air yet, but I will just say that it looks like it's possible, and I underscore possible, that the judge may end up throwing this thing out. Possible.
You mean with General Flynn?
Yes. And well,
what did General Flynn technically do wrong that he got in trouble for?
Oh, they said he lied under oath.
Okay.
He lied to the FBI.
He also made Vice President Pence look bad.
As though that were a crime. But
I know, but I'm just
saying. Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, that's the reason that he was fired. But the problem was General Flynn was visited by two FBI agents not long after they took occupancy, meaning
they were
the Trump
measuring
team.
The curtains in his office in the White House.
Totally.
Huh? And Comey sends over two agents to... I'm just setting things up.
Right.
When I say set up, I think I want people to understand what happened here. Go ahead, Sandy.
Well, General Flynn had been working with these people. One of them was Peter Strzok. They'd had conversations, friendly conversations, been working together during transition time. Now the Trump team is actually in the White House, and they are just, you know, putting things in their drawers. And the agents call and say, hey, we need to talk to you. Can we come over? He says, sure, no problem. He doesn't get an attorney. And they come in and they proceed to interrogate him on a phone conversation that he had with Kislyak, the Russian ambassador. And when the two agents left, they both wrote in their reports that they did not think Flynn had lied about anything. But suddenly, and trust me, this is a mystery. This is such a mystery that his own attorney, Sidney, right now doesn't actually understand this either. But later then, one of the 302s was changed. We know that. That's not even legal. That's the FBI's agent's report, like handwritten scratch notes about that's their 302 of what just happened. They always write stuff down so they can remember.
Sure.
And it's not, you can't enter that in a court record, but that's they rely on that for their own memories, and they file it. The 302.
Or
one
are
of
they
the
put in their diary?
Yeah, and then leak it to the press. No, they don't. Otherwise, can you imagine what chaos? That's the Inspector General made that point. 35,000 FBI agents know stuff most people don't know. And so now are they going to go, is it okay for them to all leak? But anyway, so the 302 that was written, one of them, after Flynn's so-called interrogation, completely blindsided by this, the two agents reported that they did not think he had lied. But later something happened. The 302 was like altered. And then suddenly they claimed that Flynn had lied, and they made him in court allegedly admit that he lied. My understanding is that they threatened him. Now, this is my understanding, okay? My understanding from what I've read is that Flynn was put in a corner so that if he did not plead to this one charge of lying, his family were going to go after his family, especially his son. And they had already, you know, he'd already lost one of his homes. They've bankrupted him. It's disgusting what they did to him. So my understanding is that General Flynn pleaded guilty to lying just to get them to stop. But then they didn't stop. You know, so this is all playing out. Sidney Powell, again, is his attorney. Sidney's been my guest several times, but before she became his attorney. And she is, man, she's fighting. Oh, man, is she fighting. And she's a champion. So we'll just see if she's able to get this thing reversed. I hope so.
One other you got 5 more minutes?
Yep, I got it.
Okay, one other topic we wanted to cover with Sandy, Fred.
Yeah, Sandy, the Epstein case is still unfolding, and we're starting to get some more information with regards to who used to travel on his very private airplane.
This just came in my inbox, and so are you guys sitting down? Because I'm going to tell you, I can't read all of these names, but I'm just going to give you an idea. Let's see. One of the names on here is, Barack Obama. All right, Alec Baldwin, Anderson Cooper, Ben Affleck, Beyonce, Bill Murray, Charlie Sheen, Chelsea Handler, David Koch, Demi Moore, Ehud Barak, Jim Carrey, Jimmy Kimmel, John Cusack, John Legend, Kathy Griffin, Katy Perry, Kevin Spacey, Meryl Streep, Michelle Wolf. Remember the comedian that trashed the president at the Correspondents Association? And here's one, Oprah Winfrey.
Where are you getting this?
Quentin Tarantino?
This is a list that's just been released of people that have flown on Epstein's planes.
Now just set the stage quickly, because we don't have too much time. Why this is important, who Jeffrey Epstein is.
Jeffrey Epstein is a pedophile. Yes, he just killed himself, allegedly, in a prison. He had an island that they called Pedophile Island. That was a nickname for it. And it was the one that had that grotesque temple with the like the domed top. He's the one who had several mansions, a compound in New Mexico. And one of those mansions in New York, he had a picture of Bill Clinton dressed as a woman in a blue dress like Monica Lewinsky wore, the famous blue dress.
And Bill's called this plane the Lolita Express because he was known for having underage girls brought in, oftentimes against their will. Well, always it would always be against their best interests. For the purpose of just guess.
Yeah, well, bad things happen on the Lolita Express, and that's the plane that these people traveled on.
Yeah, wow. You know, I know that Bill Clinton was tight friends with Epstein. Here's the thing about it to me is that, like with Harvey Weinstein, everybody knew his reputation. That is, Epstein. I mean, he didn't hide it very well.
No, and he was convicted in Florida, remember, a long time ago?
But even post that conviction in Florida, or plea deal, or whatever he did, there were pictures of a private party I saw the other day, a private party with Katie Couric coming out of his residence.
Yes, yep, that's right.
To be careful here, okay? I do want to say, not that I'm not excusing Epstein. He was a loathsome individual. But now my understanding is that some people said, I did see young ladies. I didn't know they were underage. I mean, I want to be careful.
Well,
I'm just saying, if
you're like this for 20 years, 30 years, people know your reputation. And go ahead, Sandy.
Well, and let me add too, Ed, you're right about that. We have to be very clear as we can be. But that mansion, the mansion of Epstein, now we're reporting nude photos of women everywhere, dolls hanging from chandeliers, photos, you know, pictures, obscene pictures, the one of Bill Clinton dressed like a woman with heels. Right. And who hangs out at places like that?
And all these, a lot of these left-wing celebrities and politicians evidently didn't mind going to his parties.
That probably is not atypical for Hollywood people at certain parties.
Hey, Sandy, got to run. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you. Talk to you soon,
guys. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.